Now this is, we begin our World Watchers. It's broadcast number 656, July the 2nd, 1984. This time last year, there were a lot of subjects that I brought up that are very, very pertinent in the news this week and the past weeks. Our time is getting a little bit closer. It's sort of like an accordion where it's all squishing together, and what was affecting us each year that I talked about had a relationship to what we're seeing and doing now. But this week they were squashed together with a lot of overlapping, so I'll spend time on the subject of what was happening last year and then go on to what's taking place right now. That was broadcast number 604. July the 4th, 1983. Last year, I was talking about a meeting of Gordon Novell of the Central Intelligence Agency with Mitchell Werbel of the Defense Department and the CIA, Alan Bell, Colonel Alan Bell, his son, and G. Gordon Liddy of Watergate fame, and all worked with the CIA, the Defense Department. And there was a meeting they had discussing high technology and counterintelligence. All of these men worked for the past three presidents and were involved in offshore banking and insurance. And we talked about those three men just last July. An article that I got out of, it was called Technology Illustrated, that somebody sent to me from Boston, describing these characters, and all of them, I believed, were involved in the killing of John Kennedy in some way or another, or at least in the cover-up, or actively in the agencies with those people who participated in the killing. Now, that was July last year, and in that interim, by November, late October, November, December, January, Mitchell Werbel, G. Gordon Liddy, and Gordon Novell all moved into the house of Larry Flynt as soon as he wanted to publish The Rebel and talk about who killed John Kennedy, the Nazi connections to who killed John Kennedy. And as soon as he met me, these people swiftly came into his home and into the Hustler magazine, were on the payroll, living at his house, weaving themselves in and out of the life of Larry Flynt, as well as Timothy Leary and a few other infamous characters. In addition to their being there, the very first day that I went to Los Angeles to the new offices of the Rebel, there was a man named Michael Stephen Canale in the offices, and I was introduced to him. He wrote a letter, he wrote an article, or two-part thing, on the Nazis and Klan for Rebel magazine. But when I walked into the offices over there on Sunset Boulevard, here was this Canale, and he was introduced to me. That's the fellow I talked about on the program when I was down there that had the little doll they were going to play Hang the Rabbi, which was so cute, and their Nazi hats, their Luftwaffe hats, and so forth. This is the guy. I pulled out in one of the early articles I had, May 1981, about Canale. Two Nazis admit setting ablaze at a synagogue. Two self-styled American Nazi Party leaders set fire to a Temple City synagogue last December in retaliation against the Jewish Defense League. And this was a story about Canale, who described himself as a party commander, told local authorities that the local Nazis were so angered by the Defense League that in addition to burning synagogues, they were willing to kill school children. And I have a long article about Canale and his link to the Nazis going back to that time period. Well, you can imagine how surprising it was to not only know that these creeps were in and out of Larry Flynt's life, but that this Canale that I knew about was in the office. When I was introduced to him, I immediately recognized who the character was, and I told you, you remember, I said, "What are you doing here with Jim Good and these people down there at the Rebel office?" And he said, "Oh, shh, don't tell anybody. The people working around there didn't know his past." So what did he get? He got $5,000 or $6,000 or $10,000 to write two articles and was hanging around Larry Flynt's offices. I don't think that's what Larry set the Rebel up for. Of course, it closed shortly afterwards, but a year later, Larry Flynt, less than a year later, is in a federal penitentiary for various and sundry crimes that don't include murder and vulgarities. You know what happened to Larry Flynt, and getting a good mind control job on him and making him discredited in public, drugging him, making him, I believe he was drugged, making him discredited in public, and certainly he was that. Also, in this past year, in June of 1984, there was an article by Richard Vagary, Five Reasons Why Reagan Is So Important to Be Reelected. And he mentions how the High Court will have important decisions in the future, that members of the court are appointed for life and answer to no higher authority in government, yet their decisions have a greater impact than anything the President or Congress does. And Richard Vagary went on to say that they will make decisions and try to affect Hustler magazine, which is now available at corner newsstands. And he mentioned specifically Hustler and what I was writing about in the article that Larry Flynt published on JFK and the Nazis was Young Americans for Freedom. And Richard Vagary was a part, still is, of the YEF and the John Birch Society and the people behind the murder of Kennedy. So Vagary is saying we have to get our Supreme Court in why Reagan's important to be elected, because then it'll affect, he specifically names Hustler magazine and Larry Flynt's crime. One of them was to publish about Larry McDonald and the Birch Society and the Young Americans for Freedom and the Nazis and the murder of John Kennedy. So a year ago, I was talking about Novell and Werbel and Liddy, and then within the year, they moved in as soon as a magazine called Rebel was supposed to get off the ground. A year ago this week, I talked about an article in the Los Angeles Herald about the Zionists that make an effort to hide their criminal allegiance. This was published July 27, 1983. They want to hide their criminal allegiance with fascism in the past. The article was called Along the Road of Aggression and Racism, and speculation that the Zionists were formed at the expense of victims of Hitlerism, that they let some people die in exchange for having this country called Israel. And the Herald had a story, the Jews set up the Israel, they were allowed to set it up as a puppet rump state of the Third Reich, and the Reich Bank set aside funds created in Palestine, which was a pro-Nazi Jewish state. And I was talking about that and have updated that story quite a bit. That was last year. Well, this week, Mr. Farrakhan, Reverend Farrakhan, the friend of Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, is saying that American support for Israel will start us into a third world war. And he quotes a book called The Transfer Agreement that just came out by Edwin Black, B-L-A-C-K. And he said the presence of the state of called Israel is an outlaw act. Many of you saw the article. He said the Zionists made a deal with Hitler before World War II so that German products would not be boycotted, and this was in exchange for 65,000 German Jews emigrating to Palestine. I was having a discussion with somebody this week about Farrakhan, and some Jewish people are very upset about Jesse Jackson and his relationship to Farrakhan. And I said, look, you can't have an opinion about them just based upon a gut level of what they're saying, because you have to take the content of what they're saying. Is there validity in what they're saying? Did the Jews and the Zionists work with Adolf Hitler to form Israel? Could they have worked with Great Britain during the war and opposed Hitler in exchange for Britain promising them they would have Israel? Or did the Nazis and the Grand Mufti over there in Palestine that worked with Hitler and over there in the Middle East, did they have to work with the Nazis, Begin and his friends, the Irgun and the various terrorist groups? Why did they have to work with the Nazis when from 1933 on, they certainly knew everything that Adolf Hitler was going to do? The exterminations may have sped up. They were, you know, the final plan, the Eichmann plan for the extermination, escalated, you know, and was going full swing up till 1945, and maybe it, the idea came, I forget the exact date, of shipping people off for total genocide. But maybe it was 1940 when the conveyor belts began to put these people, millions, in the ovens. But from 33 to 1940, they had a lot of ways to know this was going to happen. And it is a fact that Israel has to now live with their relationships in the past. One woman that I was talking to, who's an attorney, said, but at the time, it was expedient, and they didn't know. And I used that quotation of Henry Miller when he was writing to Lawrence Durrell, the writer, and Durrell wanted to publish some books because he was starving and he could get them out faster. They weren't really good books, but then he'd have time with the money to write a good book. And Henry wrote him a letter and said, it's like giving your daughter out for prostitution because you're hungry, and then you recycle her, and as soon as you have enough money to support yourself, you try to pass her off as a virgin. you do your best, even if you starve, if you have a best. And certainly there are people, Zionists today and Zionists in the past. And not only is the past that we're talking about, but the present today, they're entertaining all the Nazis, the fascists, the Zionists today, arming the right-wing dictatorships all over the world. So it's a matter that happened then, but it hasn't stopped, and that's the dangerous part about it. Last year, the Cartergate papers, the briefing papers, were very much in the news. These stories said how Reagan used the books, Jimmy Carter's books, to take advantage of his debates, how the papers were photocopied before October 28, 1980, and Fred Fielding, who had the role of John Dean in the Watergate case, Fielding is the counsel for the White House, and he was there with the whole Watergate team and survived it, just like Mr. Casey did of the CIA and a lot of other people. Fielding dropped the inquiry into how Reagan got the books and was coached to appear knowledgeable about the subjects they were discussing when they had stolen papers, and they also took papers from the National Security Agency and so forth, so that he would jump the gun and be knowledgeable what to answer, and Jimmy Carter could bring up subjects, or the League of Women Voters and Reagan throughout the whole election. Actually, the CIA director, the future CIA director, was in part stealing these papers to coach the president to be, and then he would be appointed CIA director, and Robert Keith Gray's names were on there, and William Casey and other people. So, and this week, this case has gone on for a whole year. This week, the Attorney General had the power to bar the special counsel, and that was held up in court. It's gone on for a year, and William French Smith said that I don't have to have an independent counsel for what happened in 1980. Now, this is a conflict of interest. He's the president's attorney. The president made him attorney general. And many of you read the story that there was a decision made, an unsigned seven-page opinion. They're too chicken, you know what, to sign their name to it from the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. And the New York Times says the use of eight judges to decide the case bypassed the usual approach of having three judge panels hear the case. They used a tricky bypass so they wouldn't have the regular panel listen to the case. The appellate court said that the factual information in the possession of the Attorney General was sufficiently specific and credible to trigger the Attorney General's statutory duty to investigate. This is from the New York Times, June 26, 1984. The Ethics in Government Act was passed in response to post-Watergate concerns that when you have a Justice Department headed by a presidentially appointed Attorney General, and if he can't be trusted to do impartial investigation, you get a special prosecutor. But the Attorney General says, I won't do it, period. The law provides that a special three-judge court must appoint an independent counsel whenever the Attorney General seeks one, but they can't have any power to do it otherwise. So there's your catch-22, and many of you have read that in the paper. The purpose of the 1978 Ethics Act would be frustrated if a recalcitrant Attorney General were able to stonewall to prevent the appointment, and that was what William French Smith did. Judge Green said the four Democrats on a congressional investigating panel said that the known facts of the matter suggest that crimes such as theft and illegal receipt of government documents may have been improbably committed. These crimes were committed, but now they have stopped the court. Eight people, unsigned, their names are in the newspaper, a Mr. Banzoff and another person, Peter H. Myers, wanted this case to continue and open it up, the famous Debategate. And they said, we'll probably never learn whether people like CIA Director William Casey lied in connection with the involvement. Today's decision that the court had should prompt Congress to amend the ethics law one more time to provide for lawsuits so that they can sue if there is still a cover-up. If you need a special prosecutor to open up a case and the Attorney General is protecting his own team, then the Attorney General decides whether or not you need a prosecutor. So I think you get the idea. William French Smith investigated the first time, and then he turns down the special prosecutor saying, you can't go into what I did, even though these lawyers have studied it for 1 year and say there's evidence of it. Now, a year ago this week, I was referring to a Los Angeles Times article called Police spy case figure is silent about his activities. That was J. Paul sharing the files with Western Goals and the computer system from the Los Angeles Police Department to Alexandria, Virginia, and linked to mafia bosses, Nazi death squads, fascist fronts, and so forth. The Western Goals is linked to the LAPD, and at just a year ago, J. Paul was being very silent. Now, that was in July. In September, a short time later, Representative Larry McDonald was killed, September the 1st, 1983, the head of Western Goals. And the second point is that the LAPD had a huge multi-million dollar lawsuit of 131 plaintiffs against the LAPD. They quickly settled out of court, almost $2 million. And again, they used the attorneys of Ronald Reagan and the office of William French Smith. But they would rather not go to court on their spying activities. They'd rather pay these radicals, they call them such radicals, and settled out of court. So in 1 year, within this short time, the case never went to court, and the primary witness of the story was killed September the 1st, and that was in the news last year. Another story we talked about last year was the book, The Price of Power, by Seymour Hersh. It's called The Price of Power, Kissinger and the Nixon White House Years. And that book, incidentally, goes into, around page 19 and 20, Henry Kissinger and Ober Ammergau with the top Nazis and his role being with them right after the war and how they were rounded up and the enclave where Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer were. Now, this book got a lot of attention. Hodding Carter III said Hersh will be honored by history and his colleagues for exposing Kissinger and his prince, Richard Nixon. There's another quotation, Kissinger betrayed President Johnson, Cyrus Vance, and others in high places while passing secret information to the Nixon campaign. It's like the Reagan Gate all over again, or Carter Gate, passing them on. Reagan, as National Security Advisor, has undermined the Secretary of State, William Rogers. And this was a book that came out just last year about this time. What happened in that time to update this year? Henry Kissinger took over Senator Henry Jackson's commission that was to investigate the problems in Central America. Senator Henry Jackson died the same day that Larry McDonald died, September the 1st, 1983. Senator Jackson was always referred to as the senator from Boeing from Washington. He was the main lobbyist in the United States Congress for the Boeing airplanes, and it was those airplanes that were manufactured and identical, almost identical, that went down, one went down and one flew back to safety when Larry McDonald was killed. The Boeing was the 135, the nickname for the KAL 135, the spy plane, was a Boeing airplane, and that went down. The KAL 007 went down with Larry McDonald, but the almost identical plane, the Boeing airplane that went side by side, went back to the United States into safety. Kissinger took over Jackson's committee in Central America, and then instead of being honored by history and so forth for exposing Kissinger, Ronald Reagan immediately put him on Alfred Bloomingdale's seat of the Intelligence Advisory Board. So he got promoted at two places, and he's the main spokesman for NBC, ABC, and CBS Radio. If any news events come, and he's now running a syndicated column for many newspapers, it's covered in the London Times, the Los Angeles Times, the San Jose Mercury. He is very much in full swing, and all the efforts of Seymour Hersh were completely ignored, the scandals around Kissinger. And Richard Nixon also is interviewed publicly, and his face is in almost one paper every single day that I read. Now, Time Magazine, July the 2nd, 1984, to update the Seymour Hersh story, has now been asked by the Soviet Union to investigate the Korean airline 007. That would be an interesting project. As I say, Time Magazine mentions that article in the Defense Attaché that came out in London about a week and a half ago, and how the Korean airline was on a spy mission. And Time says Moscow certainly remains eager to promote its version of events, which they said at the beginning of when the plane went down, it was a spy plane. And Time refers that the tragedy is still a mystery. And the Soviet Union has taken the unusual step of allowing a well-known U.S. investigative journalist Seymour Hersh to interview the Soviet chief of staff and to visit the Soviet airbase. Now, that could go one of two ways. Seymour Hersh wrote about the murder of Salvador Allende, and I believe it was Atlantic Monthly, and said that the CIA wasn't involved in the murder of Allende. Later, he backtracked and changed it, but it was quite a shock to hear him take that position at first. But now he's been asked to talk and investigate the Korean airline. He's done extensive work, 5 to 6 years, on the book on Henry Kissinger. He knows full well the menace of Kissinger. So Seymour Hersh is now jumping from Henry Kissinger last year at this time to the Korean airline, which is current at this time. And, of course, it tangles with the Los Angeles Police Department and the various offices around the world of Western goals. Remember the events that were so important last year, because there's so many articles in the news and they'll just go like Vesuvius, boiling over and over continuously. The murder of John Paul I that will update from time to time. The Korean airline, the excuse for the Cold War to maybe escalate the hot war. And also the story about Aja trying to kill Mehmet Aja of the Grey Wolves, the Nazis, the fascists, the dope dealers, trying to kill the Pope, because that would escalate the Soviet Union and the bestiality of the Soviet Union. So the Anti-Soviet Act of promoting for 3 years this story, the Korean airline being shot down with Larry McDonald of the Birch Society on it, and then, of course, the Olympic Games and the chance for terrorism there has been in the news continuously, and the Grenada invasion, which was a test case for future islands or even for the United States someday. Those stories will always be in the news, and we'll update them as much as we can each week. Now, the Los Angeles Times had a story that was also carried in the L.A. Herald that I thought would be of interest to you. It has to do with Mr. Peter Ueberth, the head of the Olympic Games. He's the Olympic chief in Los Angeles. And he came out this week and called Chief of Police Daryl Gates similar to a Nazi. He says he's a Nazi at heart. He didn't come out and call him a Nazi. Well, I have no particular love for Peter Ueberth, and I had the feeling that if a coup were to happen, he has the right contacts also to allow it to happen in this country and a lot of terrorism to begin. But Ueberth evidently didn't like the LAPD role of offering safe houses to defectors, of having these violent radical groups from Eastern Europe and the Klan and the Nazis and all the groups offering safety to the athletes from the Eastern countries. And Ueberth wanted a successful Olympics, I believe. He's accused Daryl Gates of not giving the proper security to certain places around town. Now, it's 2 weeks before the Olympics, and he's comparing Daryl Gates to a Nazi, and he won't retract the story. And Gates has a story in the Herald, all these people are coming from all over the world for the Olympics, and I'm described as a possible Nazi. In the LA Times, Gates said that he was mentioned as a possible candidate for mayor. The remark could have a tremendous impact on what I might be able to do in the future. Nobody wants to hire a Nazi, and no one wants to vote for a Nazi. Well, Gates hired some Nazis to help him with the security of the Los Angeles Olympics. And apropos of those remarks, that they're challenging each other. One was on Good Morning America or the Today Show, Mr. Ueberth calling the chief of police in L.A. a Nazi. You've heard how many links I've made on broadcast of Western goals to the actual planning of the massacre in Munich in 1972 and the Nazi organizations. Louis Tackwood of the Los Angeles Police Department, a defector, just a year before the Watergate story broke, said that the Los Angeles Police Department under Daryl Gates and Ed Davis was their goal was a Gestapo. That's printed in the book, The Glass House Tapes, published by Avon Press. I wrote in 1974 with the SLA as the CIA, the link of the Munich massacre to the Los Angeles Police Department and the phony terrorist scare in the United States as an excuse to introduce the SWAT teams. And they've brought in, Gates has brought in people for security that we've had on the air many times in the last year who were actually part of Adolf Hitler's security and Nazi teams to be down in Los Angeles for these Olympic Games. Now, is it possible that Mr. Ueberth is catching on, that there's a little more plan than what he anticipated, and that there are not only similarities to the regime in Nazi Germany, but there are Nazis from Germany who are involved in Los Angeles and with the police department and with Western goals, and have been for a long time, who have a finger in it, the so-called security of the Olympics. So he, from a point of knowing what he's talking about, I think he felt safe and would not apologize that the chief of police is acting like a Nazi, has the heart of a Nazi, but doesn't hesitate to use the word. Now, a gentleman died this week. You may not remember his name. Some of you might. James R. Thornwell. He died June 28, 1984. It was reported in the San Francisco Chronicle. You might have seen him on 60 Minutes, and his importance is obvious to you. When I go into the subject, you might remember him. Thornwell was 46 years old when he died. He was the subject of an Army LSD experiment, and last week he drowned. An apparent seizure, like an apparent heart attack. He might have had an epileptic seizure in a boat. He was swimming in a pool, according to his wife, and they said there's no evidence that his death was related to the LSD experiment. Now, he had a multi-million dollar suit against the United States Department of Defense. They took this black man to a chalet in France and gave him LSD. He didn't know it, had this substance, didn't know it. He got out of the Army. He was crazy. He got well. He went crazy. He came home. He lost a job. He got well. He lost another job. He had recurrent seizures and episodes through the years. He got married. He divorced. And 16 years after the experiments, the Army admitted that he was a subject of this LSD. And, of course, the daddy of the LSD experiments was Timothy Leary. A lot of people tell me that Timothy Leary was innocent. Another fellow hanging around at Larry Flynt's house, his pictures in all the magazines, The Hustler and also Rebel, picture, I'm sorry all that happened. Rebel would have to close with these people around there, obviously. But here's the LSD. People say, well, that doesn't affect you. Why would the Army give this man over $600,000 a settlement? He came from South Carolina, $625,000, because what they gave to him is recurrent, does happen again, and he just conveniently drowned last week, so he's not around. The living proof that it isn't a one-time thing that you give to somebody and then they have one bad trip and get over it, and any other problems they have later are unconnected. The Army admitted that it is 16 years and then now into the future, the seizures and so forth were the result of chemicals added. It's not pure LSD any more than, say, an aspirin you can have, and then if you add other chemicals, it isn't an aspirin anymore. It's called LSD, but they made a settlement with him of $625,000, and now he died of an apparent epileptic seizure out in California in a Vallejo swimming pool. It's too bad that he couldn't remain alive so that we could see him when he's 40, 50, 60 to see if what they did to him in France is still acting and gets in the bloodstream, and you can't kick it at all. This was a terrible thing. They admitted what they did, and the formula that they had, I assure you, is still around. Now, I just want to update a quick story on Mark Rich and Company. I talk about it all the time. Mr. Davis is trying to buy his 50% of 20th Century Fox that owns Pebble Beach. Marvin Davis, the oil tycoon, he wants to buy Mr. Rich's stock. But the point is, he hasn't bought it back yet, and they are partners. He's bought 50% of 20th Century Fox and the entire Pebble Beach area and a lot of property up here. The two articles, quickly, if I can do them in 2 minutes. One is from the London Times, Pretoria Facing Oil Deal Scandal. This is from Johannesburg. And this has to do with South Africa has an oil purchasing agency called the Strategic Fuel Fund, SFF. And they keep track of their money because there's an oil embargo against South Africa because of the genocide. And South Africa is paying 220 million pounds more, which is approximately $440 million more than they had to, not the cost of the oil, to somebody for what the London Times says is a scandal ready to explode a big corruption scandal. It was at that point when the scandal broke that Mr. Botha, the Prime Minister of South Africa, quickly went to England to see Margaret Thatcher. Now, the man supplying the oil, wouldn't you know, according to the dossier handed over by an opposition leader, said that the money paid, that £220 million, $440 million more than the contract, has to do with old Mark Rich, the man who put Henry Kissinger on the board of 20th Century Fox, and William Rogers, that was the board with Grace Kelly, and Madame Chenault. Wouldn't you know that there they are, Kissinger and company, selling South Africa the oil and making $440 million plus. So the London Times, not our local paper, but he has property up here, not the LA Times, only the London Times, said that the problem, the scandal in South Africa, is the money that Mr. Rich has made over and above what the oil cost. And the scandal, of course, is that American who left this country owing many, many millions in back taxes, the largest single case we ever had, the partner of Henry Kissinger, is now hiding in Switzerland, won't answer the courts, and he's involved with sending the oil to South Africa. We'll take a 1-minute break, and I'll get back to that subject in a minute.